I guess what I see it more is like, we're above the law, right? Like, you don't have to look at us.
Alabama Tape Projection.
Hey, welcome to Taking It Down, the TV and streaming podcast from the Alabama Take. We give thoughts that range from complex to simple, from analytical to basic about shows and movies on TV. I'm Blaine Duncan, editor-in-chief of the website The Alabama Take. I've always enjoyed determining why I like and dislike things, and I have a little bit of a side hustle as an English teacher, so hopefully that lends itself to our busy listeners who want some insight. It's great for listeners that it's not just me breaking down what you want to know. It's Adam Morrow, our erudite touring and studio musician who keeps up with fine literature, Donovan Reinwald, who specializes in media at a New England college and loves film, old books, and more. And Natalie Morrow. She's the first person to go to about fantasy, sci-fi, comics, trashy reality TV, and Beyonce's music. We're here for lovers of television who are just too busy for anything more than the series or movie itself, or maybe for the person who just does not want the typical critic or Hollywood adjacent analysis. Plus, like a lot of Alabama Take productions, we're high quality. We actually think. Hey, welcome to Taking It Down. That's us. We're all four here. We're done with the YouTube segment. I want to shout out a couple of interesting, inspiring Substacks of late that are free, worthy of your time. Jake Eliff has a wonderful one called Sunday Steadies. He did have an accompanying podcast with it that you could listen to on Sunday evening. I think that's a little on hiatus, but now every day in December, he's doing a Substack release paired with a piece of art to go with it. They've been really kind of simple and straightforward and inspiring. I don't know. They've been really good. Good stuff. Find that Sunday Steadies. And then our very own Adam Morrow. You want to plug it? Because I love it.
I didn't want to, but I will.
Because honestly, the name just slipped my mind.
Echo Caravan.
Echo Caravan. It's free. Obviously, right?
It doesn't have to be, but yeah.
Well, I was going to say, I haven't paid for it. Am I doing something illegal? No. If you're in Florence, Muscle Shoals, the Tri-City, what is that? The Quad Cities?
You were forgetting Tuscumbia.
Yeah. So if you're in
the Quad.
If you're in the Quad Cities, that's Florence, Muscle Shoals area, you need to go very soon find Fireside Florence on Instagram and let them know you need your decor done or your wrapping done for Christmas.
Soon. Today.
Get the lights up.
They're booked.
That wrapping, that's such a valuable service.
What a boon to the Florence area.
To any area, really.
Take my money.
Okay.
Done deal.
That's actually Natalie there who's involved with that. Before we get any longer part of the show, Natalie, I'm going to throw a curveball at all of us, I think. You and I have finished Loki. What were your impressions?
I thought it was a decent, entertaining season. I think it probably accomplished more for Marvel at large than it did as an individual season of a show, but I enjoyed it. I thought it was good.
I think we're on the same page. I thought the show really faltered when it expected us to care about these unseen timelines. We're supposed to care about them. They did end up showing a couple, by the way. Mm-hmm. Donovan, did you finish the series?
I didn't finish it, but I had that same complaint where it's like the timeline, you know, like in The Big Weeding, right? It's just stuff on a screen.
It was
really
weird.
Hard to care about that.
And
or whatever they call it. Cutting, I guess. Not weeding. Weeding is something weeding, else.
Cutting? Trimming? Did they call it trimming?
I forget what it was. Pruning.
Pruning.
It was pruning, wasn't it?
What do we do to our plants? We prune them.
You prune tomatoes, guys. You weed the field that the tomatoes are in.
Thank you, farmer.
Mr. Farmer, Blaine.
Oh, excuse me. Loki does have a moment where he says, hey, I'm doing this because I've actually made friends. That was a nice moment. I've made friends with these people and I want to kind of save them. And you do see a bit of their timelines there. It just took a little too long to get there.
Oh, Loki's growing up.
Yeah, it was nice. It was a bit too repetitive here and there. Some of the episodes felt like they were just trying to accomplish the same thing again, which is part of it because they're jumping to and fro in time and repeating the past in a way.
I mean, it was nice that the whole thing was about him and he finds his friends. And a lot of those episodes that weren't that entertaining was like, well, at least we got to watch our friends, you know?
That's true.
And it's a great ensemble, so it didn't really matter.
Right. No, I was just about to ask how much of it is just because of the actors and these characters in particular, not so much the story itself. And I think that's what it boiled down to.
Yeah, for sure.
Especially the last one, and watching Hiddleston act the hell out of being in a frustrated hurry.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was really good for the last episode. I won't get into a lot. I know a couple of us haven't seen them all, but overall, pretty good. I thought Jonathan Majors and Tom Hiddleston's interactions in the last episode was good too. And, you know, why not shout out Owen Wilson, because it's always enthralling when he has such a great delivery of, looks like someone got a hold of the set list. Do you remember that line? It's a pretty good line. I like that. We've got a show we have started this week. It's only been on three episodes are currently available for streaming via Showtime or Paramount Plus, if you have that edition there, however they're doing the package now. It's called The Curse, from Showtime specifically, made by Nathan Fielder and Benny Safdie for A24. You might know that production company for its indie rip, famous movies it's done in the past 10 years, Oscar worthy or at least very interesting. Nathan Fielder and Emma Stone stars a married couple doing an HGTV show. Like, literally, they don't even try to hide the name. It is an HGTV show.
That was perfect.
Yeah, it really was. And we'll get to some of this stuff. Now here's where I need a little help. They're trying to help a community create sustainable living as well as live better lives, maybe make sure they got some jobs here and there or something. That's their idea of their HGTV show.
On the surface.
They're building community, man.
They're no losers.
We don't have to be afraid of the G word.
Gentrification. The big premise in the first episode, which is the only one I think we'll end up talking about, and I'll tell you why in a minute. I promised my crew two episodes, but it's going to be one today.
I only watched one.
So. Okay, well, there's that. So we got Fielder's character is Asher. He is maybe brought home some sort of curse to Stone's character as his wife, and her name is Wit. Benny Safdie is also in the film, and he plays this palpably grimy, disgusting Dougie director filmer guy who's
Love
with
it.
Them. He's the documentarian getting it. Holy shit, is the opening scene painful to watch, and it just gets harder to watch. But good job on the opening scene of letting me know what it wanted to be. It's not cringe. It is, I labeled it in my head, cringe horror. Oh, this is cringe horror. And I thought to myself, Natalie's at home right now, because in my mind, she watches it at the same time I do, in my mind. And I thought, Natalie's at home right now thinking, what the fuck have I gotten us into?
She's hiding behind the couch.
Was she?
No.
Was she? Like, she's not here. Natalie, jump in here. Right? What in the world are you thinking? This is like the anti-Natalie show.
I know. The first episode, I think some of the stuff that's so bad is so like, just like, this wouldn't happen. Like, it's, I can separate from.
Natalie, micro penises are real.
I am not worried about that. That is not the concern. Although we did press pause and have a long conversation about that during that episode.
I did not like any of that at all.
That didn't bother me.
It was great.
I just had questions about, because Adam immediately said, that's not how you hold it. And I said, well, you're going to have to explain some things because I don't know.
Well, that's probably because Adam doesn't have a half-inch penis. Because they showed two penises in this episode, for those who haven't watched it. By the way, let's just go ahead and draw spoiler lines.
It was excellent. Excellent prosthetics work, I hope.
God. Cringe horror.
That part was not cringy to me.
No, it wasn't as bad, but it was just, I don't know. And it's not because they showed male nudity. I was just like,
almost more cringe, because like, haven't we all been cornered by like an in-law who wants to have a moment
who
with
wants
you?
To and measure like, penises?
You know, it's not always that.
It's just guys.
Adam, has Larry had this conversation with you?
It's like, where is this discussion going?
Adam was just leaning in for the tomato talk.
You know,
beef steaks?
You try to find out about fertilizing tomatoes, and all of a sudden.
Well, then you start thinking about all the different tomato varieties, and you start making comparisons, and it just can go places.
I did love when he just peed on his tomatoes. That was great.
With his tiny,
he's like,
tiny
I just have
micro
to do
penis.
This.
Fertilizing, man.
Why did the micro penis scene bother me so much? Because it's not the nudity.
Have you ever read the works of Sigmund Freud?
This is not a lie. I carry a copy of The Illusion of Dreams in my work bag. And I don't know why it's there. I'm not bragging. I'm just saying it's there. And I haven't picked it up in 30 years.
You might want to flip through the index for the micropenis chapter.
I will look for that. No, that first scene where they're trying to make the poor cancer-ridden mom cry on screen. It's funny in hindsight, but I was thinking, of course, Natalie's not enjoying this, was my first thought. And then the ATM scene happens where Asher is desperate to get cash for the poor girls outside whom he tried to donate, but he took back the 100 because it was too much. That's how he gets the curse. I thought to myself, this is where Natalie hates this show, where he's sitting there trying to put in his pen and they say, just tell me your pen, man. Just tell me.
None of this bothered me. They were when we talk about episode two, then I'll have some things to say. But this episode, that was fine.
You know, the ATM thing, this is almost like the way that he sets himself up is almost like an episode of Curb, where you think like
minus anything funny.
I don't know, it's pretty funny, but
it's only funny to me in hindsight. It's only funny to me in conversation. Now, when I was watching it, I was like, God damn, man, fuck me, this is hard.
But like his reaction to the ATM thing is perfectly acceptable to not want to. I mean, this is like a whole George storyline on Seinfeld, right? Even in real life, like to not give your pen to a stranger and then to want to change it, perfectly fine. He got himself into that situation just straight out of Larry David. Like if they had played the
good
music
comparison
after he took the 100 back, it would have worked.
Right, and it's not played for laughs here, I don't think. I mean,
I thought it was funny.
I think they're playing for laughs.
Yeah, wow.
Oh, see, if I knew they were playing for laughs, then I would not like it as much.
Yeah, I'm with Natalie. I think it's played for horror.
Don't you think it's both?
Well, it could be.
Those two things are not necessarily diametrically opposed.
That's true.
I mean, they're lampooning this sort of couple, white savior couple, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And we're supposed to laugh at them while also being kind of horrified. And like when the little girl says, I curse you, it's kind of like, whoa, I think she's for real.
I liked how they kept, which I thought was funny, probably not really, this really might not have been a joke, but the constant refrain of them were like, they're reassuring each other that they're good people, or they're like, we're good people. It's just utterly hollow.
Yeah.
As evidenced by any one of their actions.
Yeah.
It was great.
And Emma Stone has like perfected the fake smile.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's fine kind of look.
God, yes. She's so good at that.
She's so good. And like, she's so likable in most roles.
Yeah.
And becomes such like a, she's tapping into such a punchable archetype of a face when she does that. It's very impressive.
Yeah. Tough juxtaposition because you like her. You know, and then she's doing this.
And you're trying to figure out if she is actually a better person than he is. Maybe there's some stuff in episode two that would, she's at least more like socially adept for sure than he is.
She's almost more like image conscious, right? Where like he'll be like, oop, I gave the bad interview. And she's like, what are you doing? Like, this doesn't look good.
But it also just comes naturally to her. Whereas he's, he's got a lot of try hard, but not a lot of finesse.
This show is one horrible scenario put in place only to escalate it. Much like Curb Your Enthusiasm, but again, played so differently. It was a tough hang for me. I was going to watch two in a row last night. And then I got done with one. I was like, I can't do that. I would rather watch Louisville and Florida State's offenses.
Which is the same vein of entertainment, to be fair.
It's the same horror cringe, you know, yeah. There wasn't a scene to me in this show that wasn't developed to make you uncomfortable. I debated dipping, but it sounds as though now that I talk about it, I kind of am getting a lot of laughter. I don't know. It was a little slow. I will say the first episode was definitely slow for your usual drama, which that wasn't rectified at any point with any, even still looking back, I felt like it was a little too slow. It's a big swing. I know Nathan Fielder's known for this kind of stuff, but he's usually doing it in more of a fake reality kind of way. Are you guys familiar with his other things? I've never watched
them. I haven't really watched any of his stuff.
Yeah, I've been told I would love them. Nathan, for you specifically, is the one I was told I would love. I do love that kind of cringe comedy where there's a few people in on the joke and then there's a few that aren't. You know, the Borat style of really dumb cringe, maybe.
Yeah, let's don't Borat's elevated. Well, Borat has transcended his genre.
Yeah, he's on my mind because I was talking about him this weekend a couple of times. He came up in conversation. You brought him up with even.
Your wife?
Yes, you brought him up once. There's some pluses, even in the first episode for me, despite the uncomfort I felt. It's got that beautiful A24 authentic look of having been shot on film. They do incorporate distance in their camera work, even though there's not this idea that they're filming the filming of a documentary. It's just supposed to be a straightforward, Dougie is there to document them.
Which is pretty, I agree that it looks fantastic. And the setting of New Mexico, like the Santa Fe, Albuquerque, but they're in Espanola, right? Is that the
city? Oh yeah, they say that many times. We love Espanola.
Right. It looks really cool, and it's like a cool setting for a story that I don't, mm-hmm. outside of some movies, I can't think of a TV show with this firepower that's been there since Breaking Bad to that particular patch of ground. So it looks really cool. And some of the shots, you're talking about the distance thing. I mean, I think we're supposed to think about who's watching them, right? Because
I think so.
Sometimes the
camera.
Again,
that horror element.
Right. Something's watching from the bushes. Or, there's some shots where they're following him in a car or mm-hmm. passing him or something. And not only do you have the effect of the camera keeping up, but it's looking through a window. Like, very obviously looking through a window.
Yes. Like you're in the passenger, or excuse me, like you're in a car that's right beside him. Like, just like you said, I thought Safdie, if you'll take what Safdie's doing here and compare it to when last we saw him in Oppenheimer, he's doing good acting lately, right? I didn't know he was such an actor.
You ever seen Good Time? He was pretty good in that.
I don't think so.
That's got Rob Pattinson in it too. It's good. It's worth watching.
I haven't seen it. So interesting. I didn't know that he was such an actor. I only kind of sort of associate with him with Uncut Gems, obviously, which I think is just stellar movie making. Okay, well, I tell you what, I'm going to continue to watch because I've gotten a kick out of laughing about micro penises.
I'm surprised you haven't brought up Steven, Blaine.
What else do we need? Steven is the vibrator, or we don't
actually. He doesn't want you to look. Okay, tell him I'm not looking.
That was so. I thought it was great. Horrible. Yeah, I mean, it was oddly funny, but it was also, there's this thing happening where I was sitting there thinking, why did you marry this guy then?
I'm pretty sure during that scene, Adam said, aw.
That's an appropriate reaction.
Natalie, are you in? Because they seem on the fence about watching episode 2. Are you in for episode 3?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, I'm not on the fence. I enjoyed it.
Okay.
I'm not anymore.
I thought it was really good.
I couldn't have watched the second one immediately last night.
No, we
I just couldn't have done that. Okay. Good.
I think it helps for me that, like, by and large, I loathe reality TV because it's this. Like, to the point that, like, I think that there's an element of, like, Donald Trump played a rich, successful person on reality TV and people thought that was true.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of love what they're doing.
I think living in a town where people talk a lot about, as we do, as you said at the top of the show, the Quad Cities. Like, it's a small town that has some history, but it's still like kind of on the up, and like hearing the way that people talk about community building and like bringing people along, and like there are some people genuinely doing it, but it's also just a lot of bullshit too.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I mean, as it is everywhere, it's pretty great to see it just picked apart.
It seemed like it was taking on a little too much for me at times. If it would have went straight horror, cringe, or satire against reality TV, I think I would have been more open-armed about it, but it also seemed like it was going to try to tackle big themes, capital B-T, and I was thinking, do we want to expose ourselves that way? Doesn't she lay that out somewhere? It's really in that interview, I think, is where they try to say, we're also going to do this. Right, with the gentrification and
yeah, I mean, they're trying to give jobs and
expose the gambling commission.
Well, but they're doing that in exchange for killing the interview.
Yeah. But there was like another couple of themes I felt like they were going to try to rope in, and it just felt like a big flashing light. Look at this, look at this. And I'm honestly should have jotted it down in my notes because now I'm forgetting what they were. But I was thinking, okay, do you want to try to pick that up in episode one? Should you wait and sprinkle it? But anyway, I'm going to watch episode two and three and four. I'll see how far I can get this week, but whew, I'm going to have to space those bad boys out.
Take a walk for some fresh air in between.
What could help me cleanse my palate here after these?
You already did it, playing Louisville football.
I was about to say, because I don't have any more Louisville football to watch for a month.
Louisville basketball will start soon, right?
That's fair. That's what we got on The Curse, episode one. If you made it through some penis talk, then hey, we might be the podcast for you.
It didn't last long.
Wink. It actually never made it in.
Oh.
poor Nathan Fielder and his character. I do like Nathan Fielder, by the way. And I think he is startlingly resembling Andy Greenwald, if you know that writer. And do you know him from Grantland days or The Ringer?
I don't.
Look him up and then look up Nathan Fielder and you won't be able to tell the difference. He's also a podcaster, by the way. So anyway, yeah, we'll take a break. On the other side, we got the second episode of Fargo to talk about a little bit.
Third.
Oh, yeah, you're right, because they doubled down.
Because it was one and two. This is number three.
What am I thinking?
And I wish they put out four.
For real. Third episode of the fifth season of Fargo. Bunch of spoilers there. Save it for when you watch. We're going to say goodbye to Natalie and Adam and talk to them next week with more about The Curse. Okay, we're back. We're back. Segment two. We may not have a lot to say because we only have one episode. We're going to talk about the third episode of the fifth season of Fargo. It's on FX and then streaming the next day on Hulu. It's how I catch it. The creator is still Noah Hawley. We'll reference him probably a lot. If you wonder who we're talking about with Noah Hawley, that's him. He writes and he directs a ton of these. He might direct all. Do you know
for sure? He did not direct this one, but he wrote it. This one had a different director. He directed the first two. Episodes of the season. I should be clearer.
He has a writing team, I think, for some of his projects, but he may not for this. We're going to spoil everything up to the fourth episode. Let's dive in. Donovan, I've never followed up on Holly's on-screen texts that are insistent that these are true stories. Have you ever followed up on that?
What do you mean? I mean, it's from Fargo, the movie.
Yes, but is he yanking our chain? Or are all of these seasons based on something that's actually happened?
Because
I've never followed up and say, okay, well, what's...
In a sense, yes, but I think it's yanking your chain. But, like, it has, like, resonance with things that have happened, right?
Yeah. Well, yes, and I keep saying the use of the word insistent because the text, it's every episode. It's not just the first. It's every episode. These are based on true stories, and then everything fades except true. And then It even says something like, we only change the names of innocent so they will be protected. Yeah. Or, you know.
Out of the request of the survivors, the names have been changed. Out of respect for the dead, everything else has been told exactly.
Right. It's kind of hammering home. It's either doing one of two things. This is actually true or it is totally not. So I can't quite put my finger on what. I mean,
it's kind of in the in-between there.
Do you know for sure?
I mean, I don't believe it's based on like an actual true story, but I think it's based on stuff.
Okay. Well, the picture
just
from...
in the sense that like John Hamm's character, whose name has completely slipped my mind, is
Roy,
clearly Arpeo. Or I thought they did really, really good stuff in the second season where everyone's really excited about Reagan and like to vote for Reagan, and Reagan comes through, and it's he was in Army of Darkness. Come on, how can I not? Bruce Campbell. Playing Reagan, meets him in the bathroom, who's getting it mixed up, like his movies and everything mixed up with real life.
Yeah.
I thought that was great.
What season was that?
Oh, that was season two.
Right.
Yeah. Everyone, you know, all this may be editorializing on my part, but I've thought one of the things I really liked about season two is that all the characters who you really liked and you were in their corner and they were like good people are also about to vote for the economic policy that has, you know, crippled the country and the world ever since it was implemented. And you know, season three kind of followed up on that, and there's some overlap with season four too.
Yes, and he's still doing very similar thing here. You're right. I was wondering there for the longest if Hawley was messing with the idea like Tim O'Brien does in his writing, where all stories have truth in them.
Yeah.
Even the made-up ones, you know?
I think kind of like that. Probably. You know, like a little bit of things they carried stuff.
Right. 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 Thank you.
Yeah.
This season, maybe a lot more is playing the notion of Westerns.
Yeah.
Maybe more than other seasons. In a modern light and how that manliness is not productive. Now, I know Hawley has done that, but you really see it this season the way John Hamm plays Roy.
I do think that kind of an interesting thorough line has been masculinity and its failures right up from the first season, where you have Martin Freeman's character feels belittled by his wife and so kills her with a hammer. You know, like he's that sensitive.
Oh geez, he killed her.
to Lorne Malvo And I agree.
Because in that first season is a pregnant lady working for the sheriff department. Not only is she a lady, she's a pregnant lady. Let's give her let's give her the attributes of woman, you know, capital W.
I've been enjoying, I agree with you, Blaine, because it's not just, I think I really like the way that they have the John Hamm character and also Gator. Because, Gator really is a scared little boy, but he's trying to get his daddy's swagger. Gator, and just like the way Gator is trying to live into that is, I think, good and interesting. I mean, not good, but good in the thematic sense.
Good in the way that it is holding your interest. Exactly. Yes. Gator is the young man's version of masculinity. John Hamm is the 40 and up, 50 and up man. This is what masculinity is. This is John Wayne. You know, yeah. John Hamm has this moment with his father-in-law, his current father-in-law, in the opening scene or very early in the third episode, and he does the John Wayne cowboy squint as he replied to him in the darkened room of his home. And I was thinking, damn, Hamm is trying to be a cowboy right there.
Oh yeah. He's and great. I believe that John Hamm is a smart person, a smart actor, and knows exactly what he's doing. And he's nailing it. I think he's nailing it.
He made that choice, or Hawley or the director said, make sure you cowboy this up a little.
Yeah.
And he did. And this is making it so interesting for me. It's a good show so far. How jolted were you by the kidnappers? I live here now.
Love it.
I love that.
I'm sorry. I'm a very simple man. And if you give me simple things that I like, I won't look into it too deeply. Just between the, like, I live here now, and then the time jump to Wales 500 years ago.
That was my next question. If that didn't jolt you enough, the strange cut to 1522 Wales.
Loved it. With Sin Eaters and all that kind of stuff. Right. I thought it was great. I'm really hoping that I would be completely fine if there's something weird or supernatural going on with that killer.
Oh, yeah.
He believes in nothing because he is a sin eater.
That's exactly what's going on, in my opinion, so far. I've only heard the term sin eating, and it was a decade ago. Have no research knowledge on this whatsoever. As soon as I saw it, though, played out on screen, I thought, that's sin eating, isn't it?
Yeah.
How fascinating. Yeah, apparently that's kind of what sin eating was supposed to have been. It wasn't. It was depicted well on screen. That's
apparently
what happens, right?
Some folklorists were like, well, it was sometimes beer, but yeah, you eat a thing, you drink the, and then you say those words.
You say the words essentially. And you carry, right. The idea is you're carrying their sin and you're cast out from society, which you probably were anyway, since you were in so much debt and poor and poverty.
Is it bad that, like, I actually got excited when they did that? That I was just like, hell yeah, I wasn't expecting this.
Oh yeah. No, it's not bad. I was there, dude. I leaned in. I think I physically leaned toward the TV.
I think I did too.
I was like, what? Huh?
The New York Times art recap that I read described this season and this show, this season particularly, as having swagger. And I'm like, like it's like, in a way that, like, last season didn't. Like, it's just like, yeah, we're gonna do this. And sometimes it probably gets it in trouble a little bit, but like, swinging for, swing big, right?
Last season had swagger, but I think that it wasn't working somehow.
Yeah. And this one is clicking. Did you know that metal song that Gator's listening to, It was written specifically for the show.
Oh, I didn't know that.
By the show's composer. Yeah, it's not a real song.
I didn't know that, because they did well with this.
Or it is a real song, but it was specifically for the show. Yeah, it slaps. It's great. I love that.
Incredible use, lovely use of Prodigy Slap My Bitch Up. Hey, you put that.
I do think they've had pretty good musical. Would you call them Q's almost? Yeah.
How they're scoring the show.
Really good.
You put Smack My Bitch Up in any Halloween scene for me, and I'm all in. Simple Man, Simple Pleasures, again.
Uh-huh.
But the scene ending, I thought, was a direct comparison to the religion of the sheriff being antiquated and out of use.
I think you might be right, just because,
you know,
speaking to it, especially because I think him being a sin eater puts his statement that I'm a nihilist in a different kind of light, you know, like I'm a nihilist, and I don't know, maybe they're going to, like, I'm a nihilist because I know there's no God, because I've done all this, and whereas, like, the sheriff does have that idea of, like, order, right? Like, there's an order to things.
And God put me here to keep that order.
Exactly. What do you want tonight, Daddy? The helpless hitchhiker?
Oh, right.
The angry feminist?
Hey. Have your fun, but John Hamm's character wasn't having it. He was too high and concentrating on the other wife.
That's good stuff.
Apparently, they're probably it's a good take that they're probably still married.
Yeah, I'm enjoying Juno Temple as Dot.
She's doing great.
I think you kind of mentioned it, but like when they go to the gun store between I'm sorry, I can't remember his name, but the guy who plays her husband just being like, oh, geez, hon.
I can't remember his name either, but he's doing such good work here.
And her just being like there's the line where she's like, oh, there's a waiting period. And like, she's very upset and disappointed. And then she's just like, okay, well, let's go look at that pepper spray. Like, she just.
Yeah. Oh, we're getting. I liked his reaction. I don't remember the line, but he's like, oh, we're getting both.
She's getting thousands of dollars worth of firearms. The guy's dressed like, I don't know why, but the guy being dressed like a pirate and doing like the arr thing was just hilarious.
And he keeps it up, but his patch is real.
His patch is real. And then he says, he's like, we got to do a background check. Make sure you're not, you know, psychos or socialists. That was a joke.
No one laughs. It's funny that the episode did not do a ton. Like, nothing really happened. Here's the rundown. I could do it in seconds.
Yeah.
Gator knows where Dot lives. Sheriff Roy knows her home landline number. The police in Minnesota are onto something, because the state trooper from North Dakota who was shot in the first two episodes has encountered Gator again. And that's it. Oh, well, the large kidnapper is, I don't know. He just, he's taking up residence.
Something weird going on there. He's cutting himself in a little shed somewhere, or not shed, like an earthen mound.
Boy, that gave some Robert Edgar vibes.
Didn't it?
Vibes.
Yeah. I was thinking of, it was kind of like some scenes from, what was that last one? The Northman, right?
The Northman. Yeah. Intensely so.
Enjoy. Also, it is so funny that you said nothing really happened, because like, I was entertained.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't disagree with you, Blaine, but I was entertained the whole time. And then at the end, I'm like, how can you just leave me here?
Uh-huh.
Like, I got to know what happens next.
Yep. Also, and that might have been a little rug pulling out, because I don't know that we knew that Gator was going to find where she lived, but to end right there, that's a little too cliffhangery, right?
I mean, you know, sometimes, like, if you're manipulating me, I'm like, okay, I know what you're doing. That's annoying. Mm-hmm. This time I'm like, you're manipulating me, but you did it very well.
Okay.
You have me eagerly awaiting Tuesday, so.
Yeah. By the way, the large kidnapper's name is Ulla Munch.
Munch or something like that.
Yeah, and it's spelled old.
I've seen that in articles. Do they ever say his name, though? I honestly do not.
Yeah, Gator says it, and he says it in such his funny Midwestern accent where it's hard to follow. Mm-hmm.
Man, how good is Gator?
Really good.
He's doing such a good job.
I love that.
He's such an asshole.
Mm-hmm. I love that Joe Keery is getting to do more than just Stranger Things. He's not going to be pigeonholed in that crap.
Yeah.
No, it's not crap. Excuse me.
He's doing an excellent job. And, like, just everything, like the vape pen, the Slim Jims, mm-hmm. the, you know, the Mountain Dew, the Don't Tread on Me Confederate flag.
Yes.
We've met this, all of us have met this asshole. He's doing such a good job of being like, man, yeah, it's the big, you know, the way he wants to be a big swaggering dick, but he's actually kind of a fuck up.
Yeah, he's total
fuck up. It's just great.
It's interesting that okay, so I saw this brought up, I think, somewhere else, so I can't take credit for it, but why is Sheriff Roy putting so much faith in him? Surely he knows that kids won't accomplish shit. Right.
I don't know. Is it because, I mean, is it just he's his son and this is a constant, has he succeeded well in the past or?
Maybe.
I don't know.
You got to think he probably has done what his dad said and therefore he's just going to let him.
He's at least, I wonder part of it if, to, you know, like, is that he's family and therefore is the most trustworthy.
And he's going to
very like, kind of clannish way.
Yeah, he's just going to follow orders, and that's what Sheriff Roy's all about anyway, maybe. Yeah,
exactly.
Credit to the show that it remains utterly fascinating despite not having forward momentum. And I will say that this is kind of a Noah Hawley thing where he gets a little ham-fisted with his themes, but I don't mind it.
He does. He can be a little on the nose.
Yeah, I kind of like it sometimes when shows will say, this is kind of what we're about. I don't mind that a lot.
Yeah.
And in this case, it was the Elder Lion. Mm-hmm. Lady,
just laying out the thesis.
Yep, policing's to keep the scum away from the affluent is my summary of what she said.
Basically, the better type.
But it was interesting the way she did.
Who also are above policing? I guess what I see it more is like we're above the law, right? Like you don't have to look at us because we can take care of. We're steering society.
Yeah, police are just the guardians at the gate. We're inside the gate. Don't worry.
Yeah. I did kind of like for a show about policing where, I mean, because every season has been kind of about policing, except maybe the last season four. Sorry, this is five. I think I've been calling it four the whole time.
No, it's five.
to have someone who's like lay out the thing where it's like, hey, like the thing that we're looking at also like has this massive aspect of like class control and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I didn't hate it, right? Like, sometimes you're just like, so far, the only thing that's really making me roll my eyes in this show is that for the flashback, they go antecedently on Fargo. Uh-huh. Okay, guys.
Uh-huh. They're wearing their glasses and pushing them up their nose. And that, aren't they?
Moist repose.
That's such a great line. I noticed a couple of viewers online called this one horror slapstick, this episode. But others said, no, it's well done. It's not horror slapstick.
I thought it was well done.
I thought
there are some funny moments.
Yeah.
And I guess I could see where it, like, maybe it's horror slapstick. Like if Dot is the woman being pursued by masked villains, it was kind of funny to see her switch all the...
Yeah.
Street names in the middle of the night and constantly like worrying that she's going to get caught.
Yeah. 2019, you'd have to think that not a lot of people would be relying on street signs as much, but okay.
Well, they had I think they addressed it nicely where they're like, they're in the GPS, right? He's looking at the GPS and he's a little confused because he's like, it says go this way, but the sign is different. So okay.
I might have been in the middle of typing a note right then.
That one gave me, I was like, okay, they got around. That's fine. They got around there.
That is, okay, I'll take it.
And they still ended up at her house anyway, right?
Yeah, I thought it was kind of horror in an okay way. Not like, you know, blatant horror, obviously. It wasn't scary, but I thought it was doing things that were nice.
I like the horror overtones of, just kind of like the weird overtones of it. Actually, it's not really anything like that, but it did sort of remind me of that last episode of Twin Peaks where the face is like there with the action the whole time when Sheriff Tillman is looking at the ceiling, and then he's like, I can see you,
uh-huh.
and he blows the smoke at her,
yep.
and it affects her where she, and I, again, I'm a simple man. I like my simple pleasures. I kind of like them leaning into the weird.
Uh-huh.
And then I really enjoyed them using the Nightmare Before Christmas mask because they're all kind of creepy.
I think that's been alluded to in every episode so far.
It has been. They're spending that Disney money.
Oh, okay. The smoke in the face was a little hokey for me, but it's okay.
It kind of worked for me, actually. I was just like the I'm watching you. Right? Uh-huh. Like, I can see you. I can see you, I can call you, I can touch you, I can affect you, you can't escape from me.
Okay.
I can impose my will upon you.
Which is his MO.
Clearly.
Just to go back to the, it wasn't that scary, but hell, I'm kind of leaving out some things in my head. Those last 10, 15 minutes with the big kidnapper, I'll continue to call him, Ola Munch, or whatever you want to call him. He stripping down to almost nothing and bathing himself in goat's blood. That's a kind of creepy
thing. Cutting himself, too. You
know, he was cutting himself.
Yeah, he's cutting his arms with a knife as he...
And then the editing created the tension and scariness.
I even thought, like, the sin-eating scene is kind of horrific.
It is.
First off, good for that old lady for just sitting in her chair and drinking all day. But, like, there's almost like a haunted house.
Yeah.
Resonance with, like, the rocker going. And then, like, I live here now.
Uh-huh. There was some debate online as well if she was really his mom.
You know, I am completely fine if they keep it open because it might just be weird.
Don't tell me. Don't even have her speak. Terrifying. Yeah. Have her drink her Pabst or whatever she was having. It wasn't Pabst.
Schlitz or something.
Yeah, something even cheaper.
Something cheap.
Donovan, you say hello. I say goodbye. Sadly. Yeah. Here we are. We're at the end of this week. Find us online. Follow us. You can keep up to date. Or just follow the podcast in your podcast app and you can see it every Tuesday morning. We're also on YouTube every Tuesday morning. We might change the date of the YouTube show. We should put that out maybe on like a Monday or Wednesday or something.
Be a little teaser.
Yeah.
Bonus.
The YouTube stuff is totally different. It's just video only. It's a little more goofy, a little more, not necessarily goofy, but it's a little more open. We kind of cover anything and everything there. Here, though, we're TV and streaming for you most of the time. Hey, I'm Donovan Ronvald.
And I'm Blaine Duncan.
That's him. We'll be wishing everyone a holiday season going forward. But we'll be back next week, so holla.
I got one last thing to say, Blaine.
Jump in here.
Roll Tide.
Do it.